Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
We've got your chance to ask Amy anything coming up later this hour, so about 35 minutes or so from this point. Some of you are asking me my reaction to Jerry Jones and the Cowboys situation. It is funny, too, because sometimes people will lambaste me. It's your prerogative on social media about why I spend time talking about the Cowboys because the team sucks. Well, number one, that's not true. They're 3-3. But we're spending time talking about the Jets, for heaven's sakes, at 2-4. Other teams that have worse records, the Bengals. But they are a team that's a lightning rod, a little bit like, say, the Yankees or Duke men's basketball or the Lakers or any team LeBron plays for. There are teams that move the needles, if you will. And I was just mentioning the radio gold that is Jerry Jones lambasting two radio hosts on our Dallas affiliate. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that people listen to. It's quality entertainment. So good for them, but also it's good for business if you've got a Cowboys team that's somehow in the center of controversy. It's one of those teams, as I say, that people always have an opinion about. You love them, you hate them. There's really no in between. There's no apathy. Because if you're in a space where people are apathetic about your team or about a particular athlete, that's actually sports purgatory. That's the worst place to be if you're irrelevant. It's never the Cowboys. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I probably won't answer your questions about the Cowboys during Ask Amy. I doubt that producer Pete will choose those. But you do have the chance to attract his attention next half hour by sending your questions to our Facebook page or online at Amy After Hours. So an easy way to find those. I did split my evening between watching baseball, of course, following some of these trades that were breaking in the NFL, but also paying close attention to the tribute that happened in Columbus. First home game of the season for the Blue Jackets as they hosted the Stanley Cup champion Florida Panthers in the wake of Johnny Gaudreau's death, along with his brother Matthew, that happened in August. And at some point, they were going to have to drop the puck at home. It was a masterful pregame tribute, not to mention the first 13 seconds of the game. If you haven't seen it, please check out the videos and the photos that are online, and you can find some of those on my account as well. Now, Dean Evason is new to the team, and he's navigating all of this with his players who were teammates of Johnny's.
It was tough, and I can't imagine knowing them as well as they did, and to handle how they handled it, and then to go play a game against the Stanley Cup champions, and play that game very well. Would we want the 2 points? Of course, but yeah, very proud of our team.
To be honest, I mean, I'll reflect on it probably tonight and in the future, but I mean, it means a lot for his family, his wife, his kids, the way they honored him here. And I mean, the whole league. I mean, Florida Panthers behind the ceremony there, showing their support. Yeah, it means a lot.
The voices of Dean Evason and then one of Johnny Gaudreau's closest friends, Sean Monahan, who is now with the Blue Jackets. Not a dry eye in the house for the tributes. That included me in my living room. It was very powerful and I think perfectly done. And we welcome Jeff Sobota, who is from Columbus and covers the team as an insider for BlueJackets.com. And Jeff, I can imagine it was a long day and a long few hours of covering it for you. So how are you feeling after this tribute on the ice?
Yeah, certainly a very difficult night at Nationwide Arena to have this ceremony honoring Johnny Gaudreau. And it's been an emotional month and a half since the passing of Johnny and his brother, Matthew. And it's been good to get back to a little bit of normalcy, I think, to be playing some hockey. It's certainly brought the team closer together in a lot of ways, as tragedy can often do. But, you know, a night like this, you know, when you knew the family was going to be there, you knew that there was going to be a pregame ceremony honoring Johnny's life. It really, you know, kind of it hits you in the face again. And it's one of those things that, again, good to have everyone there and good to have, you know, 18,000 people in the building kind of all going through it together. But certainly I can't imagine how the players played a hockey game after with everything that happened. A tragedy like this, you have the good days and the bad days, and you remember the stories and the positive memories and things like that. And I think as hard as it was good to have a chance to do it all together and remember Johnny and Matthew's life and have that chance to bring everyone together and do it all at one time. So, you know, it's kind of hard to sum it all up in one answer, but they say there's emotional moments and some things that bring a smile to your face and some things that bring a tear to your eye in a situation like this.
It was very well done. I thought it was a perfect tribute. What will stand out to you when you think back about the night?
Yeah, the two things that come to mind, the raising of the banner with his wife and kids standing with Sean Monahan, who is one of his best friends and was someone who signed with Columbus this year to have a chance to play with him again. To see them together and see the banner go up to the rafters was certainly an emotional moment. But the one thing I think everyone will remember is the opening faceoff where they left the left wing spot where Johnny Gaudreau should have been standing, left that open. And then, you know, Sean Monahan wins the faceoff over to Sam Bennett, who now plays for Florida, but was teammates with them for a long time in Calgary. And Sam takes the puck and puts it where Johnny should have been standing. And then, you know, 13 seconds come off the clock. And as everyone kind of realized what was happening there, really it was the groundswell of emotion in the arena. And you know, a lot of the players talked about, you know, that's a moment as emotional as it was, one that they will never forget in their hockey careers. To do it in a game and to have such a fitting tribute with players that Johnny had spent a lot of his career with, it just hit. It hit hard, but it hit all the right notes to be a fitting tribute for the kind of player that Johnny Gaudreau was.
What did Sean say about being part of this and standing there with the family?
It's been very difficult, obviously, for Sean. As I said, you know, came here to play with Johnny Gaudreau again. You know, they bought a house three doors down from the Gaudreau family. And of course, there's been moments here where he's been interviewed about it. And you can tell it's just not easy for him to go through all this. And it was kind of the same post game where he spoke of the combination of emotions in his head was a lot to process. And he said that a few times, but you know, he was able to say, you know, the moment where they did the face off at the beginning of the game is something he'll remember for the rest of his life. And he scored a goal in the game. And when he scored the goal, immediately got to his feet and pointed up at the rafter where the Johnny Gaudreau banner was hanging. So I can't imagine everything he went through tonight, but he did speak a little bit afterward and said it felt to him like Johnny was watching down on him today. He could feel Johnny's presence throughout the day and throughout the game. And for him to score a goal and then be able to kind of have that celebration there, I think something, again, that he will remember for the rest of his days. And it was unfortunate, as he said, it didn't come in a victory for the Blue Jackets, but it's still something that will stick with him for the rest of his life.
Jeff Sobota is with us from Columbus after the Blue Jackets have their home opener against the Florida Panthers, but more importantly and powerfully honoring Johnny Gaudreau and his family being there in-house. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. I know a lot has been reported about Guy Gaudreau being there for practice and spending time with the team and how that has helped both him as well as Johnny's teammates. How impactful was it to have so many of his family members and friends there for this night?
Certainly it was, and you know, had a chance to talk to a couple of them after the game, and they all spoke about how it just was a very fitting and tribute to Johnny. And so that's obviously great to hear as well. But I when you ask about Gee, I think that, you know, I can only imagine what that family's gone through, you know, losing two brothers, two sons, you know, two husbands over this stretch. And, you know, if you're someone like Guy Gaudreau, who has spent a life in hockey, you know, he was the one that taught Johnny everything from the moment he was probably, you know, a year old to him becoming an NHL superstar. And it's been funny the last couple of years. Johnny obviously played in Calgary for a long time, comes to sign in Columbus because it's not very far from his home in New Jersey. And he really found that out the last couple of years because it felt like his father and mother were at pretty much every game and every practice. They would just hop in the car. And I remember talking to Johnny about that after he signed. It's like, you know, there'd be days where he would just get a call from his dad and he would be like, hey, we're about an hour away. And it's like, I didn't even know they were coming. And they're basically already in the state and they're about an hour away from knocking at the front door. So it's been a family affair for them for their entire lives. I mean, they're a hockey family, and Matthew also played with Johnny at Boston College and played some minor league hockey. So I think for Guy, anytime he can be out on the ice and anytime he can be kind of part of that hockey fraternity, you know, he did it a little bit in Philadelphia as well with John Tortorella inviting him out. Anything he can do to kind of get back to a sense of normalcy. I think any of us that have experienced tragedy in your lives, normalcy helps. Anything you can do to kind of pass the time and feel like you're back in where you should be is a good thing. And I think that's meant a lot to Guy the last couple of days. And I kind of have a feeling we probably have not seen the last of him around here, because I think the more you can do that, the more it's just going to help get through the grieving process.
How did the Florida Panthers pitch in?
Yeah, and that was something you know have to give stick taps to them, as they say in hockey parlance. They made it very clear from, you know, the beginning when they were coming here for this game that they would do anything they could to help the Blue Jackets. Their head coach, Paul Maurice, talked pregame. He was actually happy to be the team that was there because they wanted to do anything they could do to support the Blue Jackets in this. And so even head coach Dean Evason of Columbus didn't know that they were going to do the face-off ceremony. So I think some of the Panthers kind of got together with some of the Blue Jackets to make that happen. A first-class operation there all the way around for them to kind of approach this with open arms and do anything they could. You know, they got off the bus when they got to the arena with purple Gatorade and Skittles in their hands, which was Johnny's favorite candy and his favorite drink. Johnny sometimes he had a very particular set of taste buds, was known for eating pasta without sauce and before games, just straight pasta with butter on it instead of putting any sort of like marinara or anything on it. So he was very well known for probably eating like a 13-year-old really throughout his career, but it worked for him, obviously. So the Panthers knew that and were sure to kind of give him that shout out before the game as well. So they did everything they could to make this a memorable night for everybody involved.
Jeff, I know this is an unfair question, but I'm going to ask anyway. What did Johnny mean to the Blue Jackets and the organization in the two seasons that he was there?
It starts going back to the day that he signed in Columbus, which I believe may have been July 13th of 2022, 2 years ago. I can't remember for sure if it was the 13th, but it was in early July when free agency started. And him signing with the Blue Jackets was a real sign to the NHL that Columbus was a desirable place to come play. There had been a number of players who had been here for a while that had kind of spurned the team and gone somewhere else in free agency, didn't want to re-sign long-term. It felt like, you know, they wanted to be other places, and it was hard here in Columbus to kind of see that happen time and time again. And then Johnny Gaudreau, when he signed in the summer of 2022, was the biggest free agent on the market. And when it happened, I mean, the NHL world and fans in Columbus were in shock and disbelief. The biggest fish out there said he wanted to be with the Blue Jackets. And unfortunately, it didn't lead to wins and losses the last couple of years, because the Blue Jackets were in a rebuilding phase where they were going through bringing in young players, trying to build their team around high draft picks the last couple of years. And rather unfortunate now that Johnny will not get a chance to see that through, because he wanted to come to Columbus. He wanted to be a winner. He wanted to help those young players come along and be a mentor to them as he built them, you know, this organization into a championship outfit. And so, you know, when you think about just the impact he's had, he was the leading scorer the last 2 years. So many kids, so many fans wearing 13 jerseys, whether they're playing hockey or just coming to the game. You know, he really embraced it here and wanted to be part of the community. And said he wanted to be here. And for a place like Columbus that has just not had the winning tradition of some other teams, that really did mean a lot. And so I think there is always a soft spot in the community's heart that he said he wanted to be here, and he proved he wanted to be here. This community meant a lot to him, and his widow Meredith spoke about that at the eulogy, just how much they love this community and how much they wanted to bring a winner. And it really was the start of a very special relationship between the Gaudreaus and Columbus that unfortunately has been cut short.
Jeff Sobota of ColumbusBlueJackets.com with us in the wake of the tribute and the home opener on Tuesday night. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So much was made of how Johnny overcame obstacles from his time when he was in college, BC, on into his NHL career. How did he do it? What kind of a player was he?
There was actually a very fitting moment in the video tribute that played before the game where Johnny had said his father, Guy, told him, because Johnny obviously was not the biggest player in the NHL. In fact, one of the smallest. And his dad told him when he was a kid, if you're a small guy, you have to play your way onto a team. If you're a big guy, you have to play your way off to it. So there was always kind of that chip on Johnny's shoulder of he had to be better than everyone else to get to the highest level. And he was at the highest level immediately from when he got into the league. But he wasn't the biggest guy, so he had to be smart. He had to be someone who could really stick handle, had the puck on a string, it felt like at all times. He really thought the game at a level that, you know, most people do not. His abilities with the puck on a stick and his abilities to not get hit and to kind of find the spots on the ice where he could do his damage was clearly someone who had, A, got a great education from his dad of how to play the game, but someone who just thought the game at a higher level, and it came through practice. He was a rink rat. He was someone who was out there as much as he could be there. You know, in the summer, there was another quote from him in the video tribute where he said, you know, usually in the summer, kids want to be playing video games or whatever. He wanted to be on the ice. And so that's just how much the sport of hockey meant to him and to the family. And, you know, watching him play the last couple of years, you could see that just in his play. If he wasn't on the ice, he was with his family, but he sure did spend a lot of time on the ice. It was really a joy to watch. And it's funny when I say he wasn't the biggest guy. There's stories going back to junior hockey when he was playing in the USHL in Dubuque, and, you know, NHL scouts would come in and get the heights and weights of the players, and he would stuff as many pucks as he could in his shorts so he would be just a little bit heavier when he was getting measured, because he wanted to, he didn't want to seem as small as he actually was. But in that small package, there was one heck of a hockey player, I can tell you that.
It's amazing to me how much the impact of Johnny and his family were felt around the NHL. This wasn't just a Columbus thing. It didn't just break the hearts of Columbus and its fan base, but also the rest of the NHL. And as much as it is really competitive sport and people are fighting for jobs and for wins and for titles, it seemed like this tragedy united the sport in a way that was really powerful.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, the tributes have come in from not just every team in the NHL, but teams around the country at every level and really around the world. I mean, we've seen this, you know, these types of tributes, you know, not just from NHL teams, but USA Hockey and, you know, the places Johnny played growing up, and just everyone who knows hockey knew Johnny Hockey because his name was Johnny Hockey. So someone who really, again, had an outsized impact on the sport for such a small guy, seemed to be universally beloved. I mean, just an easygoing guy, someone who didn't sweat the small stuff, always tried to have as much fun as he could on the ice or with his teammates. You know, when interviewing some of our players before to just kind of get their favorite stories about him, as much as they loved playing with him on the ice, it was, you know, they loved being on the plane rides with him, playing cards, and they loved just him being in the locker room, and they loved seeing him with his family, his two young kids, and just how dedicated he was to them. He really lived life the right way, and what was important, you know, his job was important to him, playing hockey was important to him. But, you know, the friendships, the relationships, and the family was really what came first. And so no matter what sector of the hockey world you can find, and something that's very funny to me is that I think a lot of guys, especially as they get older, they don't want to go to the All-Star game because, you know, you play such a long, difficult season and you get a break in the middle of the year and guys want to take it and they want to go to, you know, some sunny island somewhere in February and soak up the sun. Johnny wanted to go to the All-Star game because he could see all his buddies and see the players he knew from around the league and didn't get to see all that often on a regular basis. And it was basically an extended family vacation for them, that he and his mother Jane and the whole family would come down and they'd have a blast. And so I think that kind of just speaks to the type of player Johnny was and just how important the sport was to him and the relationships that he made throughout hockey at really every level.
What other signs or tributes that the Blue Jackets and their fans will honor Johnny will remain even after this game?
The tributes that everyone brought to the arena in the days after his passing, you know, the signs and the gifts and sticks that people put out and things like that being set up in the arena for a memorial that will be displayed throughout the season. One thing that was actually very cool tonight was we had a local chalk artist who just graduated from high school here who did an incredible job doing a chalk portrait of him here at a community event recently. She came in during the game and drew a portrait of Johnny throughout the game that is now going to hang in the arena with that that tribute. So that was really neat to see. And she did an incredible job throughout the whole game putting that together. They'll have his jersey hanging in the locker room throughout the season. As many ways as they can keep his memory alive, they will. And that's something that the team has talked about, is that he is gone, but he's going to stay with them in any way that they can really figure out to have it with them. And we learned this yesterday, actually. Since Dean Evason took over as the head coach this year, at the end of every practice, a player has to shoot the puck from the far end of the rink all the way down to an open net at the other end of the rink. And they call it the Johnny skate, because if the player makes the shot, they do one lap. And if the player doesn't make the shot, the team has to do three conditioning laps at the end of practice. And so 1-3, Johnny Gaudreau's number. So they call that the Johnny skate. And that's just something they can do in every practice to kind of keep his memory alive. So it's not going to go anywhere anytime soon, that's for sure. Mm.
I know this happened in the summertime, but now as the team gets back together and is trying to move forward in a season in which, again, jobs are on the line, they're trying to make this Blue Jackets team a contender. How have you seen them push through just to get back to hockey?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just them doing it together. And they've spoken really extensively about that, is just in, with it happening, it wasn't super close to the season. It was getting to the point where training camp was nearing, and a lot of players had already returned to Columbus, and just for them to be together has been the biggest thing. I mean, I think they were already a close team. You know, they've talked about that at length over the end of last season into the beginning of this season. But the fact that they really have been able to spend this time together, and as I said earlier, I think the normalcy helps a little bit. You get back into the routine of playing, and that kind of helps you live your life. But just being able to spend all that time together, being in the locker room, being able to share those stories, there is a bond there that is, I think, was already deep, but has gotten even deeper as this whole thing has unfolded. And as I said earlier, there's going to be good days and bad days. It's going to be some days where you wake up and it just weighs on you. And there's going to be some days you come to the rink and say, so you tell some good stories and you probably have a smile on your face when you leave. And so every person is different. It's going to be a process for sure. You know, you can't predict what the next day is going to be like, honestly, but they've all had to go through this together. And I think that's something that is a blessing, because you are able to kind of build some more relationships through something like this. And you hope you never have to go through it. And unfortunately, this is an organization that had another player pass away a couple summers ago. And so it's been a lot from an emotional aspect of it, but they're all there for each other. I can tell you that.
I was really impressed with the video in which his wife addressed the fans there before the game started and said he would want you to go out and play the game that he loved. And so certainly that's one way that they can honor him. There are so many photos and videos at Jackets Insider, covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for BlueJackets.com. And I know that this is an emotional day. Really, it's been emotional a few days and a few weeks, but we really appreciate your insight and your perspective, Jeff. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me, actually, to just kind of put some context behind it, because it really has been a lot, but it's really good to see Johnny's memory remembered in so many.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Anyways, and so much support from around the hockey community and the sporting world, as you said. So thank you for inviting me.
It's true. The NHL will not allow Johnny to be forgotten, or his brother, or the family. The Blue Jackets had to go through this night, as emotional as it was, as tough as it was. And yet I do hope it was a major step forward in their healing process. But to think about playing on this night, but then moving forward and continuing to play and having to focus on hockey without him, especially Sean Monahan, that story is particularly poignant and painful. But I just appreciate so much that they made this entire night about the family, and that the family was able to be there on hand and know how much Johnny was loved and appreciated. At A-Law Radio, got a few minutes left to send your questions for Ask Amy Anything. Have you ever in your life heard of a manager walking a player intentionally just to get to the best home run hitter in the game? Huh. A different strategy for Stephen Vogt. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Bases loaded, one out. It'll be a 1-2 to Judge. Swung on and lined to left center. Get a run in. Thomas makes the catch. Throws toward third. Scoring is Rizzo. It's a sac fly and an RBI for Judge, and the Yankees take a 3-0 lead.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The voice of John Sterling on Yankees radio, back for the postseason at the franchise's request. And this was a fairly critical moment early in game two of the ALCS. Now, lest you forget, should we just briefly go over the qualifications of one Aaron Judge, who is about to win the American League MVP again? He's a towering specimen of a man at 6'7", 282 pounds. All right, that's bigger than Cam Newton, even. So 6'7", 282 pounds. He makes $40 million a year. He's a captain with the pinstripes for the New York Yankees. Patrols center field. But those are qualifications that maybe Stephen Vogt doesn't blink at. How about the batting average at .322? The 58 home runs, 144 RBI, and these are just in the regular season. This is the dude, this is the hitter that Vogt chose to pitch to instead of Juan Soto. Never thought I would see it in my life. There's always a first, right? In the postseason, really any sport. I wouldn't keep doing this job if we saw the same things over and over again. Instead, it feels like there's something new almost every day. Aaron Judge, who had been, 2-4? At that point, I think he was 2-for-15 in the postseason. He comes up with the bases loaded after Vogt walks Juan Soto on purpose, puts Cade Smith from his terrific bullpen into the game in place of Tanner Bibee, and ends up getting Aaron Judge to fly out. Now, it is a sacrifice fly. It does walk, or not walk. It does, with the walk, then force a runner home on the sacrifice fly. I say force, you know what I mean. He was able to get home because he was standing on third base, and Cade Smith then gets the next batter to strike out. So he did what he was supposed to do. Aaron Boone called this unconventional. And I suppose you could say that it did actually work out for Vogt in that they limited the damage.
They were hitting the ball, around the ballpark, and we needed to stop the game. And in that situation, you want to try and get a double play ball. You want to try and, get two outs with one pitch. You want to try and find a way to get out of that inning, and Cade did a great job doing that.
Cade did, and only allowing just the one run on the sacrifice fly that was able to easily come home because of how far Aaron Judge hit the ball. But I really did think that was fascinating, that move, because it could have blown up in his face royally. I mean, Judge also had a ton of doubles this year, right? I mean, this is a guy who's prolific at the plate. Even if you haven't seen it in the postseason as much, what we heard from Aaron Boone after is it's always about to happen with Aaron Judge, something along those lines, I'm paraphrasing, but you're always expecting it with Judge when he gets up to the plate. And true to form, he comes up in the seventh inning with a runner on base, and he smacks his first home run of this postseason. So yeah, he had been 2-for-15 in the playoffs to, maybe it was 2-for-16 at that point, because he did not get credit for the RBI earlier in the game. It was actually, the Yankees continue to get to the top of the order. They were sending a lot of guys to the plate. And while the Cleveland pitchers, Bibee originally, but then the bullpen, are able to limit the damage until that home run, it continually felt like they were churning through a bunch of batters each inning. And so he didn't get the RBI because it was an error on his first at bat in the opening inning. Then he comes up again there in the bottom of the second. So, yeah, it's bold by Steven Vogt, but how often, maybe never, have you seen that in a postseason game? And, man, the fans were fired up just hoping that Aaron Judge would make him pay, but ultimately it led to them getting into the bullpen. And I think for Tanner Bibee, as frustrated as he was, it certainly helped that Cade Smith came in and, in essence, closed the door. He didn't slam the door. It took him a minute to close the door. I like Bibee's perspective after this start.
I feel like a lot of people at the beginning of the year, we weren't, in a lot of people's eyes, we weren't supposed to be here, but we've always known that we're supposed to be here. And we still think that, all 60 of us or whoever's here. So that doesn't change just because we're down two games. I mean, there's a reason it's a seven-game series.
So it's still a long series. Now they get to go back to the shores of Lake Erie Progressive Field and have the opportunity. Is it still called Progressive Field? Sometimes when I don't check, the ownership sells the rights to another team and it ends up changing names.
I think so.
I'm sure someone listening in Cleveland will tell me, because I know we have a very active audience on 92.3 The Fan, which I love, in Cleveland, for better or for worse. You all are very passionate, which makes me happy. And I know a lot of you tune in and listen to our show here on After Hours. The last I knew, it was Progressive Field, but I don't always keep
that's
up.
That's what it says here, yeah.
Okay, phew. Got that one right. Always go with your first answer. Okay, coming up next, speaking of questions and answers, Ask Amy Anything. So a couple minutes left for you to send your questions to our show Twix at Amy After Hours. Also on our Facebook page. And I am seeing a couple themes in there. I kind of cheated and looked to see what you were asking me. Just a few of them, not all of them. Some of them make me laugh. Some of them make me cringe. Either way, that's Pete's job to decide which questions he will ask. And so that is straight ahead. It's After Hours here on CBS. Oops, nope. I haven't done that in forever.
It's all right.
Well, I know. It's not like anyone's going to fire me.
Dollar in the tip jar.
Nobody listens to this show from management, so they wouldn't know if I was still calling it CBS Sports Radio on a regular basis. They would have no idea. Unless, of course, someone on social media tattled on me. That might be the case.
It's possible if you don't answer their question.
It is possible. Oh, I think it's possible regardless. People just love to... misery loves company. They like to drag other people down with them. 855-212-4227 if you too would like to lodge a complaint. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Peter Schwartz.
Infinity Sports Network Sports Flash.
This report sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Protect your family, your phone, and your furry friends with life, electronic device, and pet health insurance. Let's lead off with Game 2 of the ALCS. The Yankees are halfway to the Fall Classic.
Getting ready. Here's the 1-2. A ground ball to third. Chisholm fields, fires across in time. Ball game over. Yankees win. The Yankees win.
John Sterling on Yankees Radio. Yankees beat the Guardians 6-3. They take a 2-0 series lead. They're two wins away from the World Series. Aaron Judge with his first homer of the playoffs. Game 3 is Thursday in Cleveland. The scene for the National League Championship Series shifts to New York for Game 3 on Wednesday. Dodgers and Mets tied at a game apiece. Walker Buehler against Luis Severino. From the NFL, the Jets acquire wide receiver Davante Adams from the Raiders for a conditional 2025 third-round pick. Adams popped his head in during Aaron Rodgers' weekly appearance on the Pat McAfee Show. I was asked how his injured hamstring was doing.
I'm feeling great, man. Feeling great. Getting, I was working with the staff over in Vegas the whole time, and they got me back right. So, fortunately, I'll be able to roll.
The pick the Jets are giving up could become a second-round pick if Adams is a first or second team All-Pro this season, or he is on the Jets' active roster for the AFC Championship game or the Super Bowl. Bills acquire wide receiver Amari Cooper from the Browns. Vikings acquire running back Cam Akers from the Texans. NFL awards Super Bowl 62 in 2028 to Atlanta. NHL in overtime, Oilers 4, Flyers 3, Flames 3, Blackhawks 1. In a shootout, Stars 3, Sharks 2. Panthers over the Blue Jackets 4-3. Wild 4, Blues 1. The Kraken beat the Predators 7-3. Hurricanes over the Devils 4-2. The Capitals beat the Golden Knights 4-2. And the Lightning beat the Canucks 4-2. to one. I'm Peter Schwartz.
This is the Infinity Sports Network. Follow us on Instagram. Our handle is Infinity Sports Network. That's Infinity Sports Network to follow us on Instagram.
Ready, fire, aim. Producer Pete, I know there's a lot of questions. I saw the numbers, just sheer numbers coming in. So a big deal. Want to make sure we get started as we head up toward, wow, the top of the hour here on the Hump Show.
The crazy granny wants to know, or crazy granny wants to know, how was bowling with Bob?
Well, that's a great question. In fact, I saw a bunch of other people ask the same question. Because we get so busy on our Sunday night into Monday shows, and then really this week is nutso, haven't had a chance to tell you about it. It was hysterical. We laughed so hard. Now, to be fair, I had not bowled in probably 15 years, maybe 13, 14, but it's been over a decade since I bowled. And so I was a little rusty. And I kept going back and forth between a 10-pound ball and an 8-pound bowling ball, wanting a 9 and not able to find the one that I wanted. Meanwhile, Bob is tearing it up. I mean, he did really well until the last game. I'm not sure if he got tired. But what we did is we paid for 90 minutes, and you bowl as much as you want. So since there was just the two of us, we actually bowled 5.5 games in 90 minutes. We were chop-chop. We were going. So fast. I got steadily better. Ended up with a couple of strikes, a bunch of spares, even got to bowl the third ball in the 10th frame multiple times. Mostly, though, we had a blast. Here's the funny part. You use muscles that you don't use doing other sports. And so for the next 4 days, I was walking around with my left butt cheek hurting because that's the one you step with when you take that first step toward the lane. So, yeah, it was amazing. We had so much fun next to us. So we started at, I think, 6:30. On Friday evening, next to us, a group of probably 30 seventh and eighth graders having the time of their lives, just screaming and yelling. And then on the other side of us, there was a birthday party that came in a little bit later. And there were a few of them that had never bowled before. And I get so excited. I try to be all encouraging. This one girl, she was working at it real hard and ended up getting, I don't know, 8 pins on one roll. And I was like cheering for her. It was so much fun. I had not been to a bowling alley in such a long time. And because we were first timers, they gave us coupons for a bunch of free games. So we're definitely going to go back when my butt cheek heals.
Customers for life. What is your favorite food to cook and why? From David.
My favorite food to cook? Oh, this is a good one. Well, I love cooking chili. And honestly, I'm the soup queen, as my husband tells me, but my family's been telling me that for years. Chili's because you can use that pot to be creative and design your own brand. I think I have about 7 different chilies. I start with a particular base, but I do all kinds of different ingredients in my chilies. Make it spicy, make it not. My mom doesn't like spicy stuff, so I can't use Rotel when I make chili for her. But yeah, it's hearty and it's delicious and it's relatively fat-free. You know, you really can make it so that it's not got a ton of calories. You can pair it with cornbread and with bread and butter. Oh, and I love to drink milk with my chili. I know, I'm weird. But yeah, I just have so much fun being creative and making all kinds of different versions of my chili.
Speaking of milk, milk or cereal first?
Meaning in the bowl?
Yeah.
Cereal. Yeah, because if you put the milk in, then you can't get as much cereal in because it starts floating on the top of the milk. It generally is lighter than the milk. The milk is denser. So yeah, you have to put the milk in after so that you can cram more cereal into the bowl.
Favorite Halloween candy from Red?
Oh, that's a good question. I love anything chocolate. Almond Joy is a bit. I'm a big fan of Almond Joy. Love Reese's Peanut Butter Cups or the various versions of Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. If you're asking me about what are those things called? They look like little traffic cones. What are they called?
Candy corn.
A candy corn. Oh my gosh. I haven't thought about candy corn in a while. Those are disgusting, and I do not eat them, so you don't have to ask me about that.
Traffic cones taste better.
They might taste better. Oh, my gosh. They're so gross, and yet people love them. It's like Peeps at Easter. People love Peeps, and I just think that's disgusting as well.
Totally gross. Have you and Bob made any decisions regarding adopting another dog?
Well, I actually wasn't planning on saying anything, because I don't have any confirmation yet, but I have been checking out different rescue organizations that operate in and around the New York area. And I found a dog whose story captivated me. She's a 3-year-old Aussie border collie mix, smaller than Penny, but has a lot of the same Aussie characteristics. But her story is what got my attention. She was found by a shelter volunteer wandering around a town center for days in a row looking for her owner. I mean, that's how loyal dogs can be. They will wait forever at the last place at which they saw the person who they love. And she now needs a home. They rescued her. She's very sweet. She's smart. She's three. I put in an application to adopt her. Of course, I asked Bob first if he'd be okay with that. But as I was reading her story, I started crying. Then as I'm filling out the adoption and telling them about Penny, I start crying. So it was a pretty emotional experience. I have not heard back, though, but it was a holiday weekend. I'm hoping that I will hear something in the next couple days. But yes, taking at least one step. And if it's not her, then I'll continue to look for another dog who I think would fit our home, but also one who needs a new family.
Who is the most famous person you have met that has nothing to do with sports?
Dave Matthews.
Okay.
There was a time in my life where I worked in local radio in Rochester, New York. This was not long after I graduated from Syracuse. And the program director of the local rock station, well, I guess it was more like top 40 hits. He had a crush on me, so he asked me to go to a Dave Matthews concert. Little did I know that that meant not just the best seats. We were in the pit right below the stage, but we also had a pre-concert meet and greet with Dave Matthews. His eyes were half open. I'm pretty sure he was high, but I got a picture with him. I've got it somewhere in my house.
And
his concert was brilliant, so there's that.
Don't tell Andrew Bogus that. He's going to be very jealous. How is your Thanksgiving turkey breast preparation going? That's the question.
This year?
Yes.
Oh, I haven't started that yet. But actually, we just found out that we're going to have family in town. So Bob and I were supposed to spend Thanksgiving together last year. We didn't because his father passed away a couple days beforehand. So instead, I was in Texas to be there for the service. We are planning to do Thanksgiving at our house in a couple of weeks. Oh my gosh, a couple of weeks. And we found out that we're going to have family members, his brother and sister-in-law. So now my brother and sister-in-law, they are planning to be with us, which will be fun. So we'll probably do whole turkey. I'm going to have to whip out some of my specialties like walnut apple crisp in a crock pot. Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
I smell it already.
Yeah. I'm going to try not to set a pumpkin pie on fire this year. You weren't with us last year, but I did, in fact, light a pumpkin pie on fire in the broiler. It was a special recipe. I had to do it twice. I've got the pictures somewhere. Maybe I'll whip those out to show you. But yeah, I'm going to try not to light any fires in the house while they're there.
Well, speaking of lighting fires, what are the most and least satisfying aspects of your job? That's a deep one.
It is. I would say the most satisfying aspect is just the fact that I get to do what I love on a daily basis. I have wanted to be a radio host in sports since I was 16 years old. And still, every night when the microphone goes on, I feel that surge of adrenaline and joy that gets me through the tough stuff. The hard part is that I'm a perfectionist, and A, it's impossible to be perfect, but B, if you work in radio or if you've heard me talk about it, the industry is going through lots of challenges. Lots of people have lost jobs. More and more companies are trimming whatever they possibly can to cut their bottom line, which means there are fewer people doing more of the work. And I have a hard time with that because I have great ideas, or at least I think they're great ideas. Lots of creativity, and it can't implement, and we can't implement because we just don't have the hours or the manpower. So the challenge is to remember that the most important thing is what we do on the air. And if we can do extras like social media or videos or different events, then we'll get to them. But what people care most about, I think, is the connection that we have with them here on the air. So it's hard for me because I want to do more, but it's impossible right now. Because if I start to try to do more, then what happens on the air would suffer and it would be a lower quality. So that's where my focus has to remain.
Following up on a discussion we had yesterday in terms of trusting media, which medium, if any, do you believe is the most reliable? Broadcast medium or print medium? That's from Robert on Facebook.
I'm going to say our show is the most trustworthy. I don't know. Right now, I'm not sure I have a whole lot of confidence. There are a couple of outlets that I trust, but honestly, as we talked about, it's pretty clear that many media outlets use their own bias, inject their own bias. So I don't know. That's a good question. I'll go with radio, our show. More authentic. You can trust us.
If you could rename or name a field, what would you call it?
Like we were just talking about the naming rights. If I could rename a field, I would call it After Hours with Amy Lawrence in Denver. Oh, well, it might be the Denver Broncos Stadium. Actually, I would go back to Mile High, not the Invesco Field, but Mile High. There's a lot of stadiums that I would put back to their original names before they came up with the crazy. I mean, I can't keep up with them all, but honestly, some of the names out there are flat out goofy, and I think it does the teams a disservice. Just stick with the ones that brung you, like Arrowhead. You don't need to rename it. It's Arrowhead. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.